I want you to try a little thought experiment with me today. Just imagine trying to sculpt a rugged, towering mountain, like complete with deep, craggy valleys and steep cliffs. But the only material you're allowed to use, like your only tool, is water.
Right, which, I mean, that requires just completely ignoring the fundamental laws of fluid dynamics.
Yeah.
A liquid, by definition, it just can't sustain shear stress. It yields, it constantly deforms.
Exactly. It always seeks the path of least resistance. You know, you pour water, gravity takes the wheel, it slips away, levels out, and well, your mountain's just gone in a second.
Yeah, liquids escape. They don't bear weight or hold traumatic structure. That's just physics.
But today on the deep dive, we are looking at a real-world scenario where an artist forces a liquid to do, well, literally the exact opposite of what its physical nature demands. Like he forces it to carry immense weight, to suffer this brutal friction and just fight for every single inch of ground it covers.
It's a complete subversion of the medium. The artist is essentially stripping the liquid of its most defining characteristic, which is its fluidity.
Yeah, so we're heading into a tiny art studio in Whittier, California. The date is August 2020, and we are exploring an abstract piece called Kinwalker by Jairo Duque. Okay, let's unpack this, because our mission today isn't just like an art critique or a chemistry lesson on how paint dries, right?
Right, there's a much bigger conceptual framework here.
Exactly. We want to decode the core philosophy behind this artistic resistance, because the goal for you listening right now is to understand how this seemingly mechanical process of just pouring paint transforms into a profound blueprint for, well, human endurance, rethinking your productivity, and ultimately avoiding burnout.
And, you know, to really grasp the magnitude of the struggle that's happening on this specific canvas, we first have to understand the baseline. Like, we have to look at how fluid paint is almost universally treated today, especially in the algorithmic landscape of social media.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've all scrolled past those viral fluid art videos on our feeds.
Exactly. You know the ones.
Yeah, the canvas is spinning on a wheel. Someone is pouring these massive cups of neon acrylic cut with silicone oil, and then they hit it with a blowtorch to like force these huge shiny bubbles to the surface. It's totally instantaneous.
Yeah, and that phenomenon actually relies on a physics concept called the Rayleigh-Taylor instability. Basically, the heavier fluid falls through the lighter fluid, and it creates those instant psychedelic cells. But Duke looks at that whole trend, which he calls cellular spectacularity and chromatic exuberance, and he actively rebels against it.
So he's not looking for a quick dopamine hit.
Not at all. He has zero interest in instant visual gratification or, you know, hacking fluid dynamics just to make something shiny.
And the scale and the palette of Kinwalker, they reflect that rejection instantly, don't they?
Oh, absolutely.
Because it is incredibly intimate. It's just 9 by 12 inches. And the palette is radically muted. We are talking ochres, clay oranges, these oxidized turquoises, dull greens. I mean, it looks less like a shiny plastic Instagram post and more like a core sample taken from the side of a canyon.
Yeah, it's a very earthy, grounded aesthetic.
But I do have to bring up a basic physics problem here. If you pour liquid acrylic onto a flat surface, gravity pulls it into a puddle or it just slides off the edges. So how do you force physical friction into a medium that is literally designed to glide?
Well, you have to manipulate the polymer chemistry of the paint itself. So acrylic paint is essentially pigment particles suspended in a polymer emulsion.
Meaning plastic and water, basically.
Right. And in a normal application, as the water evaporates into the air, those polymer chains, they draw closer and closer together until they lock into a smooth, continuous film. But Duke intervenes right in the middle of that locking process.
So he lets it form a like a chemical skin. It loses that initial moisture, escaping the liquid phase, but it hasn't cured into a solid yet.
Exactly. He finds that critical intermediate state, and that is when he physically drags and stretches the curing polymer.
Oh, wow. So it's like pouring wet concrete, waiting for it to half set, and then trying to drag it across a driveway with a rake.
The resistance would be monumental. And what's fascinating here is how the chemical density dictates the physical trauma left on the canvas. Duke refuses to use any fluidifying mediums.
So no pouring chemicals to ease the surface tension.
None. By dragging that semi-dry skin, he intentionally forces the polymer chains to tear. He leaves raw cracks, rough transitions, and just extreme physical asperities.
Which means he is embedding the physical scars of the struggle directly into the material. Like the paint isn't just illustrating the concept of wear and tear, right? The paint is literally undergoing wear and tear.
The medium becomes the message. If he were to, say, smooth those cracks out or use a medium to level the surface, he would erase the entire history of the effort.
That's incredible. And because the paint is forced to drag its own curing weight and leave these physical scars behind, this struggle on the canvas directly translates to how the artist defines existence itself.
Yes, and he maps this out in his notes using a very specific Spanish word, which is tristeir.
Right, and the linguistic variations of that word create this brilliant conceptual clash. Because if you travel to Spain, tristeir implies a sort of lighthearted tinkering, right?
Yeah, exactly, like a child messing around with toys in the living room or someone casually fixing a radio on a Sunday. It's mischievous, but it's light and totally devoid of consequence.
But Jairo Duque is Colombian, and he is leaning heavily into the Latin American definition of the noun form a trastio. And in that context, the lightness is entirely gone. A trastio is a heavy move.
It is the physical, exhausting relocation of a life. It means packing your entire existence, you know, your furniture, your memories, the sheer physical and emotional density of your belongings into heavy boxes, and then hauling that massive burden to a new location. It is grunt work.
Here's where it gets really interesting, because if we apply that definition of a trastio to the artistic process we just discussed, life isn't, well, it's not a quick sprint down a sunny street. Life is a slow, heavy, physical move.
Right.
It's like hauling a server rack up three flights of stairs without a dolly. The paint on this canvas isn't just sliding happily along. It is dragging its own vital baggage, its own curing mass across the space.
And consider the context, too. I mean, this was conceived in August 2020.
Right in the thick of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The entire globe was collectively experiencing a massive psychological heavy move. Everyone was dragging this immense unseen burden through their daily lives. So those rough cracks and tears in the acrylic we discussed earlier, those aren't just textures. They are the nostalgic footprints of that heavy move. They are the visual echoes of a mass that passed through, fighting against its own desire to just, well, stop moving.
Man, that's heavy. But this dragging baggage isn't operating in an empty void. You can't just drag wet, tearing paint across a tiny 9x12-inch canvas without it eventually spilling over the edge or losing its shape.
It needs boundaries.
Right. The dragging mass has to push against structural boundaries. And this brings us to a really subversive element of the piece, which is his use of black and white.
Which is fascinating because historically, especially in modernist or minimalist art, black and white are often utilized to represent the infinite, or the void.
Yeah, like in a minimalist canvas where white is just the passive atmosphere or black is just a deep receding shadow.
Precisely. But Duke completely strips them of that passivity.
In Kin Walker, black and white function as literal tectonic retaining walls. But I want to know how that works on a chemical level, because liquid black and liquid white paint are just as fluid as the ochres and the oranges.
They are initially.
Right. So if you put them next to each other, fluid dynamics suggest they should just bleed together into this murky gray gradient. How do you build a barricade out of a liquid?
It all comes down to the specific pigments he selects and their molecular weight. He uses titanium dioxide for his white and carbon black.
Okay.
Titanium dioxide is an incredibly dense, heavy, opaque molecule, especially compared to the iron oxides used in those earth tones.
Oh, so it alters the viscosity of the polymer emulsion. It basically creates a physical density gradient.
Yes, exactly.
It's kind of like meteorology, right? When a high-pressure cold front collides with a low-pressure warm front, they don't just gently mix. The denser front acts as an atmospheric wall, and it forces the lighter air to violently change direction, creating a storm line.
That's a perfect analogy. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, it perfectly mirrors the reality of the human trastio. Moving forward in life never happens in an empty, frictionless vacuum.
No, it definitely doesn't.
You are constantly advancing while simultaneously colliding with the brutal pressure of external environments. You know, you face economic demands, social obligations, and structural obstacles that actively push against your mass, and they attempt to divert your trajectory.
So Duke's titanium white and carbon black, they don't just sit underneath the flowing color.
No, they confront the earthy mass face to face. They abruptly halt its spread and force the flow into this confined diagonal struggle.
Like a river hitting a geological fault line and being forced to carve a new canyon?
Yes.
And that intense forced diagonal movement is what ultimately births the identity of this piece, because that constant push against chemical density and tectonic boundaries leads us to the title Kin Walker. And what blows my mind is that the title was a complete afterthought.
It was completely unplanned. When Duke walked into that Whittier studio, There was no sketch, there was no reference photo, and absolutely no intention to paint a human figure.
Yeah, if you analyze the canvas, there are no anatomical markers at all. No legs, no torso, no face.
Nothing. The title Kinwalker only emerged after the chemical reaction was complete.
So he looked at the fully cured acrylic, like the frozen violence of that heavy move, and he saw the walker.
He recognized the kinetic energy of the action. The walker is not a figurative portrait of a person taking a stroll. It is the abstract, visual incarnation of persistence. It is the physical manifestation of the energy required to just continue advancing despite the friction of the tearing paint.
Despite the heavy baggage of the Tristio.
Exactly. And despite the tectonic walls pushing back.
I do have to challenge the artist's decision on this, though, because naming a highly abstract piece something as concrete as Walker seems incredibly risky to me.
How so?
Well, our human brains are basically hardwired for pareidolia, right? We are desperate pattern recognition machines. If you tell a listener to look at an abstract painting called Walker, their brain will immediately start hunting the canvas for a hidden pair of legs or a posture. So doesn't slapping a definitive noun on the piece essentially trap the viewer and kill the abstract interpretation?
It is a profound risk, for sure, and it can certainly trigger that pareidolia effect. However, one could argue that he's actually providing a necessary compass rather than building a cage.
But how does a title act as a compass without, you know, forcing a destination?
By giving you the starting coordinate of kinetic energy. He is anchoring your interpretation in the concept of slow, heavy movement. From that single coordinate, your interpretation remains entirely your own.
Oh, I see.
So you might look at the dragging earth tone disparities and see a massive geological landslide moving down a mountain. Someone else might perceive the slow, centuries-long erosion of a mineral. Or, crucially, a viewer might project their own internal struggle onto the canvas, viewing the walker as a profound, vital transformation of their own identity under pressure.
Okay, so the walker isn't a noun at all. It's a verb disguised as a noun. It is simply the spirit of moving forward under immense pressure.
Precisely. And that spirit of moving forward brings us to what I think is the most vital component of the entire composition. Because if the heavy dragging paint represents this exhausting, continuous struggle, there has to be a mechanism that prevents the entire metaphorical system from suffering a catastrophic collapse.
Because if you drag heavyweight continuously without stopping, the system just breaks. The engine overheats and seizes up. Which brings us to the stark, white, negative space on the canvas.
Right. And it is absolutely critical to recognize that this negative space is not a decorative aesthetic choice. It is not an area where he simply ran out of material or forgot to apply paint.
It's intentional.
Very intentional. Duke emphatically defines this untouched region as a mandatory pause. He referred to it as the untraveled terrain.
The untraveled terrain. I love that. If the thick, dragging mass of ochres and oranges represents our vital baggage, our history, and the literal scars of our friction, then the negative space is the future. It is the clean, unburdened real estate where the next step can actually occur.
Think about the biological mechanics of the human heart. The heart cannot remain in a constant state of contraction or systole. It requires diastole, which is that fraction of a second where the muscle completely relaxes and the chamber fills with blood.
And if you remove the relaxation phase, the heart doesn't pump more efficiently. It literally goes into cardiac arrest.
Exactly. If Duke had saturated all 9 by 12 inches of that canvas with dragging heavy paint, the piece would no longer represent a journey or a heavy move. It would represent an impenetrable wall of stagnation.
It would just be a visual representation of being completely paralyzed by your own mass.
Yes.
So what does this all mean for you listening right now? Let's take this concept out of the chemistry lab and the art studio and look directly at your daily calendar. Look at our modern approach to productivity, because we live in a culture that treats negative space as a failure.
We really do.
We are obsessed with filling every single 15-minute slot in our agenda. We equate constant, unbroken motion with success.
We view idle time as wasted time, rather than a necessary restorative phase.
Right. We convince ourselves that if we are always dragging our heavy baggage, always tearing our own polymer skin to stay in motion, that we are winning. But the physics of Kinwalker prove otherwise. If you do not purposefully engineer untraveled terrain, you know, negative space, silence, a hard pause into your daily schedule, you aren't advancing.
You're stagnating.
You are simply building a suffocating wall of burnout. You are covering your entire internal canvas in heavy mud until there is literally nowhere left to step.
This raises an important question regarding the dichotomy between surrendering to chaos and exercising meticulous control. Because creating that negative space isn't a happy accident for the artist, and it certainly won't happen by accident in our own lives.
No, you can't just hope the paint doesn't spill over.
You have to rigorously defend the boundary. On a micro level, Duke surrenders control. He lets the acrylic tear, he lets the edges fray, he embraces the messy, unpredictable reality of the friction. But on a macro level, he acts as an uncompromising architect.
Right. He tilts the canvas, he utilizes the molecular density of the titanium dioxide walls.
Yes, all specifically to ensure that the heavy mass of the Trastio does not bleed over and consume the breathing room.
He allows the struggle to happen, but he fiercely guards the pause. And it takes immense discipline to look at the messy progression of your life and say, I will endure the friction here, but I absolutely refuse to let it cross this line and consume my untraveled terrain.
It really is a masterclass in establishing boundaries, just disguised as abstract expressionism.
It really is. And it brings our journey today full circle. I mean, we started in a small studio in Whittier, looking at a deliberate rejection of algorithmic instant gratification fluid art.
We examine the polymer chemistry of acrylics, uncovering how manipulating evaporation creates a skin that can be physically dragged and scarred.
Yeah, and we decoded the cultural weight of the Trastio, recognizing life not as a weightless sprint, but as a heavy physical relocation where we drag the density of our history with us.
We saw how tectonic walls of dense pigment act as external pressures, forcing us into a confined struggle that ultimately generates the kinetic energy of the walker.
And most importantly, we learned the biological and structural necessity of defending our negative space to prevent total system failure.
Which leaves us with a final provocation for you to mull over today. We exist in a society that venerates extreme productivity, right? A culture that demands perpetual motion and insists that you eliminate the blank spaces in your agenda.
Totally.
So look at the architecture of your own life right now. Where is your untraveled terrain? Are you actively, fiercely utilizing your own dense boundaries to protect those vital silences? Or are you running the very real risk of suffocating under the heavy, incessant weight of your own relentless progress?
Remember the thought experiment we started with. You cannot sculpt a mountain if the water washes everywhere, consuming every inch of the ground at once. You require structural boundaries. You require friction. And above all, you require the empty space of the valleys just as much as you require the heavy mass of the rocks. Take a hard look at your calendar today and carve out your untraveled terrain. We'll catch you on the next deep dive.